Hi, it's Patrick Hutzel from intensivecarehotline.com, where we help families of critically ill patients in intensive care improving their lives instantly so that you can exercise power, influence decision making, and stay in control of your and your critically ill loved one's destiny whilst being a patient in intensive care. Now, in this video, I want to show you, or I want to give you, follow this proven 5-step system, and you can let go, eliminate, and manage your and your family's fears, frustrations, and anxiety fast, and in the process, gain control, power, and influence fast, whilst your loved one is a critically ill patient in intensive care. Welcome to another video in intensivecarehotline.com's video and ebook series. And once again, congratulations for you taking action in getting informed and taking control. Just by doing that, getting informed, you stand out from the rest of the families of critically ill patients in intensive care, and it will give you an edge when dealing with the challenges, difficulties, and complexities in intensive care. Our video and ebook series will help you find your voice and will show you how to take control, be powerful, and influence decision making in the jungle of complexities surrounding intensive care. And it will more importantly help you to be in control, feel powerful, and influence decision making, even if you're not a doctor or a nurse in intensive care. In this video, I want to show you a proven 5-step system that will help you to eliminate and manage your and your family's fears, frustrations, and anxiety fast if your loved one is a critically ill patient in intensive care. Once you have eliminated and managed those fears, you'll be in a much better position from where you have more control, more power, and a much higher level of influence. More importantly, you will be in a position where you have real mental strength, where you are mentally well positioned for whatever this challenging situation is throwing at you, at your family, and at your critically ill loved one. In this video, you will discover why admitting your fears, your frustrations, and your struggles is important and crucial for you to feel in control of the situation. How you can actually control your emotions. How you can face reality regardless what it looks like. Why seeking out for help is not a sign of weakness, but a sign of real strength. And why changing your point of view about the situation is critical, and why you can only do it after you have mastered the previous steps. So let's dive right into the 5 steps that will help you master your fears, frustrations, and anxiety while your loved one is critically ill in intensive care. Number 1, acknowledge your fears, frustrations, and anxiety, and know that it's nothing to be ashamed of. As counterintuitive as this may sound to you, acknowledging your fears, your frustrations, your anxieties, and your struggles is a critical factor, and it relates directly to the level of control, to the level of power, and to the level of influence you can exercise during this challenging time. Having fear, anxiety, and frustrations whilst you are struggling through this difficult period, whilst your loved one is critically ill in intensive care, is nothing to be ashamed of. In more than 14 years intensive care nursing experience, when counseling and working with hundreds of family members of critically ill patients, one typical reaction that I have seen very often is that families of critically ill patients in intensive care are trying to be a hero and trying to be strong by not acknowledging their fears, their frustrations, and their struggles whilst their critically ill loved one is a patient in intensive care. The only result that I see when family members of critically ill patients in intensive care do not acknowledge their fears, their frustrations and their struggles during this period is that they are either unable to cope with the situation and therefore they aren't much help for their critically ill loved one and for their family, or on the other hand, they're trying to overcompensate and they're trying to be extra strong and extra brave by pretending that everything is all right. Both approaches, not acknowledging your fears, frustrations and your struggles, as well as trying to overcompensate, will lead to you burning out quickly. On the other hand, learning to slowly lean into your fears and frustrations might help you. The reasons for family members of critically ill patients in intensive care to pretend that they are extra strong and extra brave is usually that they are afraid of slowly leaning into their fears, their frustrations and their struggles. By slowly leaning into fear, anxiety and struggle, you are often facing uncertainty and vulnerability, which can be very scary places to be. But the reality is also that by doing that, and by not admitting, and by not giving into your fears, your frustrations, and into your struggles, you are usually making the situation worse, and you are not only doing yourself a disservice, you are also not helping your environment, including your other family members, and including your critically ill loved one in intensive care. It's usually also much more difficult for the nursing staff and for the doctors in intensive care to deal with family members who pretend that they don't struggle with the situation and who pretend that they can deal with the issues at hand. It's perfectly okay to admit, acknowledge, and even welcome your fears, your frustrations, and your struggles in this situation. There's nothing wrong with feeling your fear, and you will find that by slowly leaning into your fears, your frustrations and into your struggles, you will be able to face them head on, and once you have started facing them, you can start making friends with your fears, frustrations and with your struggles. Also, if you have good coping strategies in times of crisis, improves your mental strength. It's very important that you learn a few coping strategies during this challenging time in your and in your family's life, because your critically loved one needs you the most during this time. You want to have good strategies in place to manage yourself so that you can have control, power and influence during this challenging situation. Having good coping strategies will also help you to find real mental strength and good mental positioning, so that you are better prepared and well positioned for whatever this whole situation is throwing at you. There is nothing wrong with trying to be strong, but it needs to come from a place of heartfelt strength and not from a place of overcompensation. Sometimes being strong means accepting help from others, bonding with others, and also by confiding your fears, frustrations, and struggles to other people you trust and respect. It's okay to feel, admit, and acknowledge the fear and the frustrations, and it's okay to feel insecure in this challenging, stressful, and often overwhelming situation whilst your loved one is critically ill in intensive care. Once you have done that, you can take the next steps and reach out and seek for help. Number 2, how to control your emotions. It's perfectly okay to feel emotional during this stressful and often overwhelming experience while your loved one is critically ill in intensive care. Emotions are generally speaking a healthy sign, and emotions, positive and negative emotions, can make you feel alive. While positive emotions are uplifting, negative emotions can wear you down in the long run. If your loved one is critically ill in intensive care, you might get overwhelmed with both positive and negative emotions whilst your loved one is critically ill in intensive care. Negative emotions usually come up because of the uncertainty, the fear, the frustrations, the struggles, the vulnerability, the overwhelm, and also simply because of the seriousness of the situation that your critically loved one, you and your family are experiencing. Positive emotions usually come up through hope, through small positive steps that you can see your critically loved one is making forward, and also through other positive and encouraging news you might get from the intensive care team. But also learn how to control your emotions instead of the emotions controlling you, in order to not have the emotions control you, but you controlling your emotions instead. You need to know that positive and negative emotions will inevitably come up during this stressful time. Emotions are generally a healthy sign, and it shows that you are in tune and aligned with what is happening. Be prepared and know that you are going to experience strong emotions, positive and negative. Do not let either positive or negative emotions let you hold hostage. Do not let negative emotions hijack your brain. Both emotions, positive and negative emotions, are neither good or bad. They are just what they are, and they are a response of your brain and your body to what you experience and to what you feel. Don't judge your emotions. Just let them be what they are and try and put them in perspective after you have felt them fully. Sometimes it's perfectly okay to admit defeat in the moment, and by that I mean it's perfectly fine for you to admit that this situation is overwhelming for you and for your family, and you feel like you can't cope. That's fine. Feel it fully. Usually, just like with any other situation in life, your strongest and best moments come after you have had your lowest moments. Just because you've lost the battle doesn't mean that you've lost the war. Number 3. How to face and accept reality irrespective of how grim it may look like. If you have read some of my other ebooks, or if you have watched some of my other videos, you have seen me talking about this before. I know that facing and accepting reality can be very daunting, and it's even more daunting if you are facing reality head on, especially if your critically loved one in intensive care has a poor or uncertain prognosis, or is just simply going through a very hard time on their way to recovery. But facing and accepting reality is also a natural extension of facing your fears and facing your frustrations, and also ties right in with controlling your emotions. Each one goes hand in hand with the other. If you master all three of them, you will be separating and distinguishing yourself from 99% of families of critically ill patients in intensive care. And not only will you be in control of your destiny, you will also have real control, real power, and you can exercise real influence with the intensive care team when it comes to the decision-making process around your critically ill loved one. Don't be like 99% of families in intensive care, because 99% of families of critically ill patients in intensive care are so scared about the situation of their critically ill loved one, to the point where they don't even want to ask difficult and scary questions about their critically ill loved one's situation, because they are scared that they can't handle the news. Those families usually have no control, no power, and they are not in a position to exercise any influence whatsoever. Remember, doctors and nurses in intensive care are like fish in water, and you and your family are more like fish out of water. And the more you are trying to avoid looking reality in the eye, the more you will stay like a fish out of water, gasping for water. If you and your family can't face and accept reality as it is, you often only find out what is really happening because the intensive care team are slowly and cautiously breaking the news. Or they might break the news to another family member where the intensive care team thinks that they can handle the news. Whatever the news are, they may be good or bad news, and the more questions you ask, the more you find out what's really happening. The reality is that if you can handle your fears, your frustrations, and if you are in control of your emotions, then you can also face and accept reality as it is. The intensive care team can feel when you are prepared and when you have mastered the perceived issues around your critically ill loved one. They know if you are taking responsibility, and they know why you are taking charge when it comes to your critically ill loved one's destiny and fate. But you can only do that, and you can only be influential, have control, and have power if you have faced, accepted, and understood the reality that you, your family, and your critically ill loved one are dealing with. You can only do that if you are looking reality in the eye, head on, period. Whether you like it or you don't like what you see when you are looking reality in the eye, the reality is what it is. Once you have come clear with it, that's when you can start moving forward and make your own decisions based on how you think and feel about the situation, and then take charge. Will it feel uncomfortable? Will it feel uncomfortable? It probably will. Will it be painful? It depends on the situation, but it probably will. And I'm more talking about the psychological or emotional and not the physical pain. Usually, having a loved one critically ill in intensive care goes hand in hand with feeling emotional pain. But just like mastering your emotions and mastering your fears and frustration, you can master the new reality that you have found yourself in as well. The questions you need to ask is, what's the alternative? Sooner or later, reality will catch up with you anyway, and if you are not dealing with it head on. As a rule of thumb, the reality can be your friend or it can be your enemy. If you think that reality is going to be your friend, it probably will. If you think that reality is your enemy, it probably will. If you are trying to negate the reality around your critically ill loved one's situation, you won't be in a strong position to understand what's really happening, to draw your own conclusions and make up your own mind, to make an impact in what you and your family want for your critically ill loved one, despite what the intensive care team wants or suggests. Never underestimate the power, the control, and the level of influence you and your family can have in your critically ill loved one's situation. If you do think that you can't influence much anyway, you are putting way too much emphasis on the doctors and the nurses' perceived power. Never underestimate the control, the power, and the influence you can have in any situation in life. Because any situation in life is negotiable if you are positioning yourself correctly from the start. Influencing decision making starts with your ability to face and accept reality, draw your conclusions, and act accordingly after you have come clear with what has been said. Number 4, how you seek out for help. Again, seeking out for help in your situation is nothing to be afraid of and nothing to be ashamed of. If you have come to this video and if you have come to our website and if you have gone as far as watching this video, you are on the right track already. You have separated yourself from the majority of families in intensive care already who don't look for advice or who don't seek out for help. Those families have admitted defeat already, and they will never have control, power, or influence. So give yourself a pat on the shoulder for taking charge and for taking matters in your own hands. Most families in intensive care just suffer silently, and they just take for face value whatever the doctors and the nurses are telling them. I'm not saying that you shouldn't listen to the doctors and the nurses, but you certainly need to have your own understanding and your own interpretation about the situation your critically ill loved one is in. So, what does seeking out for help look like in your situation? Most families who have a critically ill loved one in intensive care rely mainly on their own family or friends for support, and they may also look for help in other social circles. Depending on your cultural, religious, spiritual, and/or cultural background or needs, you may get members of your community involved, including priests or other leaders within your community. Furthermore, most hospitals and most intensive care units also offer social worker support, and those social workers often deal with families of critically ill patients in intensive care on a regular basis. The social workers dealing with families in intensive care are often fantastic resource people to go to, because they often see things slightly different and they often can give you a non-clinical view. And it's very important for you and your family to get a view and support from non-clinical people like social workers as well. The social workers often have a good understanding of how you feel, and they are very empathetic, and they also often know about resources that are specific to your circumstances. Some of the resources you and your family might need in your circumstances are childcare, help with care for other family members, for example elderly parents, accommodation close to the hospital, legal advice regarding your critically ill loved one's admission to intensive care, access to finances. Social workers can also act as mediators if there are family issues and family disputes. Social workers often also have a very good understanding of what is happening outside of intensive care, and they often know what the next steps are for your loved one outside of intensive care. It's a sign of strength and not a sign of weakness to ask for help if you are feeling stressed and overwhelmed. Just like in number one, acknowledge your fears, frustrations and anxiety. Seeking out for help is nothing to be ashamed of, and it's nothing that you should be afraid of, and the sooner you create a network of support, including managing and directing your own resources, you are in a much stronger position to manage your family's and your critically ill loved one's situation more efficiently and more effectively. There are too many families of critically ill patients in intensive care who, once again, are afraid to ask for help, and they pretend that everything is okay. And the more those families pretend that they can deal with their fears, anxieties and frustrations, and the more they pretend that everything is okay, the more they would really like for somebody to take the lead in seeking out help for them in their particular situation. Usually, many families of critically ill patients in intensive care feel so overwhelmed and stressed by having their loved one critically ill in intensive care that they just don't know where to start. Furthermore, if you are not looked after in such a difficult situation, and if you are pretending that you are strong and that you can deal with the situation, and in reality you feel like a ship without a rudder, you won't be giving good vibes to your critically ill loved one. You and your family's good vibes and your positive energy can be critical for the well-being and the recovery of your critically ill loved one. Number 5. How to change your point of view and make meaning out of the situation. Now you really must watch this section, because this is one of your biggest leverage points. How you can make meaning out of the situation and how you can change your point of view in the situation. Okay, so after you have faced and accepted the new reality that you, your family and your critically ill loved one are in, and after you have learned how you can control your emotions rather than your emotions controlling you, despite your fears, your frustrations, your anxieties, your vulnerabilities and your struggles, and after you have built a support network around you, now it's time to discover what it really takes to take control and take charge of your situation. This step is probably the most important step on your journey to mastering your family's and your critically ill loved one's destiny. You might think, why did I put the most important step at the end of this video? Well, you can only take this last step and change your point of view of the situation after you have learned all of the other four steps beforehand. If you have watched this far, your critically ill loved one is probably in a difficult and uncertain situation, and your critically ill loved one might be facing an uncertain future and might even approach their end of life. In any way, the situation is probably extremely challenging and difficult for you, for your family, and for your critically ill loved one. Since you have learned what it takes to control your emotions, dealing with your fears, your frustrations, your anxieties, your vulnerabilities, and your struggles, you also know how you can face and accept reality and how to build a strong support network. But those skills are just stepping stones towards the biggest impact you can make in your family's, and your critically ill loved one's situation. How you can make the biggest impact, and it's mind-boggling. The biggest impact you can have in the situation you are in is to change your point of view. I say that again. The biggest impact you can have in the situation you are in is to change your point of view. What do I mean by that? Let me explain. Over the many years, when working with and counseling hundreds, if not thousands, of family members of critically ill patients in intensive care, the families who were the most resourceful, the most in control, who had the most power, and the ones who were able to influence decision making the most were the families who changed their point of view and their thinking about the whole situation. Let me give you a couple of examples. Over the many years of intensive care nursing, I have looked after and still look after a variety of critically ill patients and their families in intensive care. One particular niche within intensive care that I have been exposed to over the years is patients who received lung transplants. Now, lung transplant patients and their families often go through many years of their life with a limited quality of life before they receive a new set of donor lungs. Before the lung transplant, they are often dependent on home oxygen, they are usually housebound and dependent on other people with a limited quality of life. The people that I looked after over the many years receiving a new set of lungs range from approximately 20 to 65 years of age. Generally speaking, their condition before the lung transplant is relatively poor, and because they tend to be oxygen dependent and housebound, they suffer from a limited quality of life. When those patients are given the opportunity for surgery and a new set of donor lungs, they are often ill prepared because the timing of surgery usually comes with no pre-warning. As you can imagine, a new set of lungs can only be given if a suitable lung donor dies unexpectedly, and therefore timing is unpredictable. One common theme that I have seen with many lung transplant patients over the years in intensive care is that irrespective of their age, the oxygen dependency and the limited quality of life that came with their lung disease made them extremely fragile and extremely anxious. Now imagine, all of a sudden these patients get given a new set of lungs basically overnight, and I see many of those patients being unable to adapt to a new and better life. Lung transplants come with many challenges, and there can be complications beyond the patient's control. Many patients after lung transplants stay in intensive care for long periods of time, and if they get out of intensive care, they often do come back for a variety of reasons. The patients who do get out of intensive care quickly after a lung transplant and the patients who do well after lung transplants usually have four things in common. Number one, they have had goals and achievements, set out prior to them receiving a new set of lungs, without even knowing whether they would be the lucky and chosen ones to receive a new set of lungs. Goals included challenging things like riding a bike, going back to work, going to the gym, spending more quality time with their family, and traveling. Those goals appeared difficult and challenging from the outside, especially if you think that those patients were usually oxygen dependent and therefore housebound. Number two, the next thing they had in common was that they had extremely supportive and positive families and friends who fully supported them in achieving their goals, no matter how far-fetched those goals may have looked from the outside. Number three, the patients and their families were extremely grateful for the new set of lungs they have been given. Number four, all they look for is possibilities and opportunities, and they don't anticipate negative things. On the other hand, as I have mentioned, there are other recipients of new lungs who stay in intensive care for long periods of time. They have many setbacks, and if they manage to get out of intensive care, many of them tend to come back, and they often die within 12 to 24 months after given a new set of lungs. Many patients do survive a lot longer, but we do see a fair bit of patients coming back to intensive care after lung transplants, and they die within that 12 to 24 month time frame. Now again, there are four things that the patients who don't do all that well have in common. Number one, they generally tend to have a negative outlook on life. Number two, those patients generally have no goals, no aspirations, and no achievements set out for themselves. Number three, they are almost paralyzed by fear. And number four, they often have a negative and non-supportive family who is almost as paralyzed with fear as the patient. Now, I have chosen patients with lung transplants because I have seen such stark contrasts in patient outcomes despite similar backgrounds, despite similar pre-medical conditions, and despite different and similar age groups. The one thing that stands out to me of the patients who do well is their attitude and their outlook on life and the support they get from their families. Those people have access to internal resources that the others didn't have. And those internal resources make all the difference. And I mean that both the patients and their families have access to internal resources which are mainly their thoughts and behaviors. I do consider optimism, goals, achievements, and aspirations as an internal resource controlled by the brain. The one thing that the patients and the families do have in common who do well is that they have a different point of view. It's the level of control they exercise about their thinking that makes all the difference in the world. I'll give you a few more examples so that this point really hits home for you. A family had a 75-year-old father, husband, and brother in intensive care after a cardiac arrest and after the heart had to be resuscitated on an open chest for about 1 hour. The prognosis for this 75-year-old man was extremely poor, and the intensive care team was rather adamant about not continuing treatment, and they suggested to limit and to withdraw medical treatment and let nature take its course. Furthermore, the intensive care team was also pointing towards the long pre-medical history of this 75-year-old man, and they thought that because of his long-standing other medical issues, he would have to fight against many odds in order to survive his ordeal. Now, on the other hand, the family of the 75-year-old gentleman understood the reasoning of the intensive care team from a medical point of view. What the family, however, argued was that their father, husband, and brother has always been a fighter, and that in spite of his pre-medical conditions, always dealt extremely well with adversity, and he always fought back and he beat the odds many times in the past. What followed was many meetings and many arguments between the family and the intensive care team, with the result that the 75-year-old man received full treatment, with the result that he survived and fully recovered after many weeks in intensive care. Had his family not changed their point of view and would have followed the opinion of the intensive care team, their critically ill loved one would have probably died. This particular family had real control, real power, and real influence because they changed their point of view and they found strength in disadvantage, and they made it a strong argument to plead their case successfully. Another real-world example that I have been involved in and witnessed goes as follows. A 35-year-old mother of two has been admitted to intensive care after a severe car accident. Fortunately, her children were not in the car as she was on her way back from bringing them to school or to kindergarten. The accident had been caused by a drunk driver speeding, and the lady had no fault in the accident whatsoever. The 35-year-old mother of two sustained severe head injuries, and those head injuries have been very difficult to manage and they were life-threatening from the start. Furthermore, she also sustained massive rib fractures and a pelvis fracture or a hip fracture. The intensive care team is fighting for the 35-year-old's life, and the intensive care team managed to get the lady through the first 48 hours in intensive care after the accident. The prognosis is pretty poor, as her head injuries cause very high pressures in her brain, so that the intensive care team has difficulties stabilizing the lady despite many efforts. It looks like the next 24 to 48 hours are going to be crucial on whether this lady is going to survive or not. The family has, of course, been absolutely devastated about the accident, and they fear for the life of their mother, wife, sister, and daughter. Over the next 24 hours, the 35-year-old lady is deteriorating even further, and the brain keeps swelling to the point where the brain pressures become unmanageable. And those high brain pressures cause hypoxia, which is a lack of oxygen in the brain, causing irreversible brain damage. The scenes around this particular case have been very dramatic, and I will never forget the fight for her life. The fight for her life was in vain, as she died from irreversible brain damage. But something remarkable and game-changing happened in the last 48 hours of her life. Something so remarkable that everybody who got involved in the case and everybody who got to know the family will never forget. It occurred to the 35-year-old lady's husband and to the 35-year-old lady's mother that she mentioned to both husband and mother independently in the week before the accident that if anything was ever going to happen to her, that she would want them not to be devastated, and that her mother and her husband should take good care of the kids if anything would ever happen to her. She also mentioned to both of them that they should continue living a happy life and not live in fear, depression, or bitterness. Both the lady's husband and the lady's mother were basically initially dismissing what she said, as they thought it to be crazy and out of context, to the point where they both had forgotten about it a couple of days later. Now, since the accident, the lady's husband and the lady's mother both confirmed to each other that the 35-year-old lady basically said the same things to each of them independently the week before the accident. And here it comes. Despite the sadness, despite the tragedy, despite the initial fight for her life, and despite the hope that faded away to save her life, something remarkably happened that shifted the dynamics of the situation completely. After the family had evaluated what the 35-year-old lady confided to her husband and to her mother the week prior to the accident, basically foreseeing her own death, family shifted their thinking and their emotions from devastation, anger and bitterness to gratitude, thankfulness and forgiveness. The situation also allowed for enough time to get all the important family members to spend about 24 hours with her before she passed away. It was still a heartbreaking situation, especially for the 3-year-old daughter and her 5-year-old brother. But their father and their grandmother felt almost at peace despite the grief they inevitably felt. But the family also felt gratitude towards their loved one's life, even though the lady's life ended far too early and in very tragic circumstances. But because of the insights the lady shared with her husband and with her mother the week before her death, they also felt that at least she was able to say goodbye, and because she was able to verbalize her heartfelt wishes for the future of her children, her husband and for her mother, the family almost felt relieved that they had received those messages. It would have been very easy for the family, despite the messages they had received from their loved one prior to her death, to continue to be devastated. They could have easily drowned in grief, bitterness, and they could have laid blame on the drunken driver who basically killed their loved one. It would have been the obvious path to let the family's negative emotions take control of the situation. But the family had the strength, the power, and they exercised the level of control to look at the situation differently. Of course, many tears had been shed at the bedside, but it was good to see that the family took condolence out of the messages from their loved one and they made meaning out of it, to the point where they said that her time had come, even though it was way too early. Now, I'm not trying to be superstitious here, and I'm not putting any weight on what the 35-year-old lady and mother of two said to her husband and to her mother the week prior to her death. I'm not suggesting that she was able to foresee her death. I am, however, saying that the family found meaning in their loved one's message. The situation really was mind-boggling, not only to me, but also to the intensive care team. And as I said, it changed the dynamics of the situation completely, and it made us all feel better. It also helps a family in such a situation to recover quickly from such a traumatic situation and move on with their lives. It was a unique situation, and it was a unique family. However, they had the internal resources to change their point of view about a situation that could have very easily left them bitter, angry, frustrated, resentful, and devastated. Whilst their first few months of their life would have been very hard for them to deal with the loss of their loved one, especially with 2 young children to look after without their mother being alive, by changing their point of view as soon as they saw an opportunity to do so, helped the family tremendously to come to terms with their fate and destiny, and by doing that they turned the situation around. The approach of changing your point of view in such a difficult and challenging situation takes courage, and you can only do it after you have mastered your fears, frustrations, your struggles and your emotions. Often, challenge, drama and trauma doesn't mean it's the end of the world. Having dealt with end of life within my own family, as well as having dealt with end of life over many years in intensive care, and by having been involved in critically ill patients and their families facing difficult, challenging, traumatic and dramatic circumstances, has changed my outlook about most challenges in life as well. I could give you more examples where families have changed their outlooks and made meaning in an end-of-life situation or in a situation where their critically ill loved one faced a permanent disability. The outlooks about a difficult situation, a challenge or an end-of-life situation ranged from people saying that it's God's will. My loved one will cope with this new challenge. Maybe this challenge will bring our family closer together. Maybe this challenge will finally reconcile our family. Maybe it's my loved one's time to go. The list could go on, and it's not exhaustive. But the point that I want to bring home here is that they all changed their point of view and found meaning in their challenge. Furthermore, you have also mastered the reality you are dealing with, and you have built a support network. Now it's time to look at your new point of view, how you can change it, and how you can make meaning out of the situation. Especially in extremely difficult and challenging situations like the ones I have just described, changing your point of view and making meaning out of a challenge is often a game changer, and it gives families of critically ill patients in intensive care ultimate control, ultimate power, and ultimate influence. I hope that this video has served you well, and I hope that you have gained even more insight of how you can effectively deal with your fears, frustrations, your struggles, your vulnerability, and how you can turn the situation around so that you feel powerful, in control, influential, so that you are mentally well positioned and mentally strong to deal with adversity. Hopefully, I was able to elevate your thinking and also to lift your spirits. I also hope that I will see you in one of our other ebooks or videos so that you can find even more strength, more power, more energy, greater influence, and also hope in your challenging journey through the intensive care landscape. For more information on a variety of topics within intensive care, check out more of our ebooks and videos, and also read our blog for more tips and strategies. Also find our Your Questions Answered section, where we answer your questions. You can also send me an email to support@intensivecarehotline.com if you have more questions. Thank you so much for watching this video. I wish you all the very best, and I'll see you again in one of our other videos. This is Patrick Hutzel from intensivecarehotline.com. Thank you.